love Dog Nation, and welcome back to our brand new show, Dog Nation at Large. As always, I'm Kaylee Mansell with Connor Riley. Connor, I don't have much to say except for, what's up, brother?
What's up, brother? Special teams, special plays, special players. Although I do have a bone of contention to pick here. How can it be brand new when it's our second show?
Because it's still new, Connor. New content,
but it's not brand
new things.
New. There's a difference there. You said brand new as if this is like first time out of the box. We've been played with before.
Well, this can be new as long as I want it to be new, because I do have host authority here. So what I say goes.
I don't know. It just sort of seems like you're selling
to make a ruling really early in today's show. Still new. Maybe not brand. No, still brand new. Kaylee wins this one.
Yeah. Can we go ahead and add that one to the scoreboard? Because by the time we update our draft from last week, I know I'm going to need that extra point. But all that to say, physically in the office this week, I have been present. Mentally, I have been all special teams, special plays, special players. It's just been on a loop in my head.
Tuesday. Sorry for cussing.
Yep. Sorry for cussing. All right. With that said, this is Dog Nation at Large.
It's the show for the new breed of Georgia Bulldog fan. This is Dog Nation at Large with Dog Nation insiders Connor Riley and Kaylee Mansell.
And just to reiterate, because I can again, this is our brand new show, Dog Nation at Large, a show where you never really know what's going to happen, but I am going to tell you what's going to happen today. We're going to take a look back at G-Day, decide our winners and losers from the week. We'll do an update from our Dog Nation G-Day draft that we did last week. We're going to talk about the troubles that come along with the transfer portal, and then we're going to wrap up with a new segment called Tired or Wired, and this time it's going to be the Masters edition since Connor did attend the Masters last Thursday. Really excited about that one, but let's start with a G-Day recap. We're going to start on a strong note here. We're going to go right into the winners. Our first winner from G-Day, no surprise to all, it's going to be the wide receiver group, and Connor, there were 19 different players who had a reception this past G-Day, but we went ahead and looked at our reception leaders. And, I mean, you saw it coming. Dominic Lovett, this is a guy that I'm so excited with the numbers that he had. 7 catches for 104 yards, 1 touchdown, and an absolutely monster reception. I'm really glad that we're seeing him play at his best, because I don't think that we even got a glimpse of the potential that he has last year. So to see him at the top of the leaderboard, I think that's exactly what Dog Nation needs.
Yeah, you look at, you know, it's so often with quarterbacks, the leap that they make from year one to year two. You know, Jaden Daniels last year at LSU comes to mind there. Joe Burrow famously at LSU as well. I think we're going to see something similar happen with Dominic Lovett at wide receiver this year. I think there was a lot of overlap between his skill set and Ladd McConkey's skill set last year. And Ladd just had more experience and was probably just a better player last year. And so year two, moving into a role where he's going to be able to play inside and outside, and you see that chemistry that he has with Carson Beck, obviously the big touchdown catch there at the end. But he had a number of big plays throughout that spring game. It's no coincidence that he led the team in receiving yards and receptions. And so I think going forward with Lovett, it's clear that he looks to be maybe the favorite right now to be the down-by-down number one guy. I'm sure we'll get into Colby Young and some other guys here. But Lovett playing on the outside, being able to wear a bunch of different hats, I think is really encouraging. And this was a guy who had a good spring a season ago, was productive, but maybe not in the way so many people expected for Georgia. And I expect going forward, he's going to have more games like he did on G-Day than I think what we saw for the majority of last season.
It's almost as like if we did like a subcategory underneath this category, the transfer portal wide receivers between Colby Young, Michael Jackson III, and London Humphreys. I think to see the connection between them and Carson Beck and Gunnar Stockton this soon almost feels too good to be true, but it looks like they just fit right in with the Georgia offense.
Yeah, and I will caution, you know, we've seen wide receiver in particular be a position where they have a big spring game and then maybe don't necessarily deliver come the fall. But I think with Colby Young in particular, it's the way in which he was used that I think translates so well to what he might be able to do for Georgia come the regular season. He only had 3 receptions, but they were for 27 yards and they were 1 for a touchdown. And the other 2 were third down conversions. This is going to be a guy who, when Carson needs to make a throw into a tight window on a pressure situation, in the red zone. He knows that he can just go up and throw it to Colby Young. He had really strong hands on a 13-yard reception on a third down pickup. So he's going to be able to use his size, his body skills, his ball skills, and I think really be able to make impressive and important catches for Georgia. He's not going to be a burner like I think they expect Arian Smith or Dominic Lovett to be, but this is going to be a guy who they trust in certain situations to be in a specific spot, and as we saw on G-Day, make very impressive plays.
So not only did the wide receiver group catch the attention of us and Dog Nation, but also Kirby Smart as well. Here's what Kirby Smart had to say about the wide receiver group after G-Day.
I know the first level, let's call it the first four guys, five guys deep, it's very experienced, like very experienced. And then after that, it's like, I'm still trying to figure out what we got. You know, there's young players that are talented. Sakovia and Nitro are going to be good players. The portal guys are still coming along. Mike Jackson in London, and then Colby is factored in and made some plays. Colby's made plays like he made like that all spring. And then when you throw the Ra-Ra Dylan, Arian, and Dom out there, it gives you a – what they are is the, like, the bullies. They bully on special teams. They lead. They show toughness. And that's usually your defensive back group. And for us right now, it's our wideouts.
So there's a lot to dissect from what Kirby just said, but I think the part that sticks out the most to me is viewing this wide receiver group as the leaders, because what we've learned from the spring season is that Carson Beck is not necessarily the most vocal quarterback Georgia's ever had. So to hear that a lot of that leadership is coming from the wide receiver group that had some transfers come in last year and had some transfers come in this year, along with some veteran experience and some new guys, I think that's exactly what you want to hear about this group at this point in time.
Yeah, I took it maybe a little bit differently there. I think he's using those comments as a way to try and motivate the defensive back group. I don't think he loves what he saw from the group on Saturday. Now, I'll point out, again, G-Day is always sort of geared towards deep passing to the outside. I don't think it's indicative of, A, how Georgia wants to play, but also how teams are going to go about playing Georgia this coming season. So I think those comments about the wide receiver position juxtaposed to the defensive backs maybe said a little bit more about how Kirby Smart's really feeling about the defensive backs than how he feels at the wide receivers at this point in time.
So to wrap up our winner for the wide receiver group, what was the one thing that impressed you most about this group at the spring game?
I just think it's the diversity of options. You see Dominic Lovett have a big game and Colby Young make an impression there. You love what you see out of Anthony Evans, a young player who had a 54-yard reception there. Arian Smith, by all accounts, had a great spring, and while he didn't make a big move on G-Day, I think Georgia's very fine with that. I think they know what they have in him. Kirby Smart mentioned him and Ra-Ra Thomas as guys who probably had better springs than they had spring games. And so coming out of spring, it's the wealth of options that Carson's going to have to throw to. And I think to have that four or five guys already, knowing that potentially an Anthony Evans, a Sakobe White can maybe develop over the course of the season, I think is very encouraging for the long-term outlook of this wide receiver room.
So with the good, there's always going to be the bad. So let's go ahead and take a look at our very first loser from G-Day, and that is the quarterback group. Here's what the quarterbacks were able to do this Saturday at G-Day. You have Gunnar Stockton here, 23 for 27, at least on the red team, I believe. 246 passing yards, one touchdown, one interception. Carson Beck, on the other hand, just 25 for 46, 301 passing yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions. So on our Dog Nation game day show that we had right before G-Day, I asked everybody on the Dog Nation staff what was the one thing that they wanted to see out of this Georgia team. And Mike Griffith actually said that he wanted to see Carson take complete control of the field. When you look at his statistics, do you think that Carson had that complete control that Mike was looking for?
I think so. Look, Carson admitted he didn't have the best spring game, played mediocre according to his words and standards. Mm-hmm. And so, again, G-Day is not a perfect representation of, I think, what the Georgia offense is going to be this year. There's not going to be a game where Carson Beck throws the ball 46 times. They're going to be a little bit more balanced there. I think Carson was trying to make some aggressive throws, show what he could do with his arm talent. He made some of those. He also missed on some of those. I think the interception that he threw to C.J. Allen just sort of can't happen, whereas the Mykal Williams one, that's just a little bit of unluckiness. And so I think with Carson, again, you see the arm talent, you see the flashes. And while, yes, he needs to do a better job of eliminating some of the lows, I don't think that it was necessarily a bad performance by Carson by any stretch of the means. And I think with what you saw on that last drive, when he's right, there are very few defenses in the country that can go out there and try and stop him. I think the reason that I have quarterbacks as a loser here is it was really just Carson Beck and Gunnar Stockton. And with Ryan Puglisi dealing with the knee injury and walking around on a cane, you can't go through the season with two scholarship quarterbacks. You saw what happened in 2019 where Georgia was really limited by what they could do with Jake Fromm there. And it's just, you really need more bodies in that room. And so we'll see if the transfer portal becomes an option there. But if Georgia's only going to have Carson Beck and Gunnar Stockton available this year, I think that's going to make them very hesitant in how they maybe try and use Carson and his legs in terms of running and escapability.
So let's shift to Gunnar Stockton for a minute, because we talked about him a lot last week. It seems a lot of the conversation was actually shaped around Gunnar rather than Carson. And I do think in a sense that Gunnar showed a lot of promise. I really think about that deep ball to Anthony Evans in the first quarter. And I do think that he showed a side of him that we didn't get to see in the Orange Bowl. But in your mind, was it enough? Was his performance enough to make you feel confident about him being number two and possibly number one if something goes wrong when the season happens?
Yeah, I think it's important to keep in mind with Gunnar, Jide is just not set up for him in the way that he wants to play to succeed. They're going to ask him to be very different than I think the way that he best functions. You know, as a guy that moves around, is able to create with his legs, they don't want you to do that on Jide. There's a reason those guys were in white jerseys and you couldn't hit them. And so I think if it does come to where Gunnar is thrown into the game, I think the offense is going to look a little different there. It's interesting, you know, he finishes with one interception, but I don't believe Troy Bowles actually came down with that interception. They just didn't feel the need to review it. But there were a couple other passes that were nearly intercepted there. And so with Gunnar, again, you know, this is a comparison BA has made and others have. I think he's similar to Stetson Bennett in a lot of ways, who never really had, you know, great G days by any stretch of the mean. But when the lights came on, he was always ready to go for Georgia. And I think Gunner's a little bit of a rhythm thrower as well, where he may have one or two off throws, but then he'll rip off three or four great ones right after that. I think you saw that a little bit on Saturday. And I think as he continues to grow and develop, that's something you could see him continue to do moving forward.
So I want to backtrack to Ryan Puglisi. We knew that he had a minor injury going on. I don't think that we all realized the seriousness of it. I mean, other than Cash Jones, of course, I think he was the one player that everybody was really disappointed to see out, especially walking around on that cane. But with that, do you think that that kind of makes Georgia having to go get another portal quarterback, does that expedite that a little bit? Because we saw Colin Drake get in there, and I don't think that any of us were expecting that to happen. So does that put Georgia into go mode as this transfer portal opens up?
It's going to be interesting. As we sit here and record this on Thursday afternoon, I don't believe that there's been a caliber of quarterback that is good enough to play at Georgia and fit what Georgia is looking for enter the transfer portal. And so I think that's part of the issue here. In an ideal world where there are quarterbacks bountiful and available, they probably look really hard at someone given the injury that Ryan Puglisi is dealing with. Kirby Smart called it a stress fracture. That's never good. And the big thing that Kirby said, it's a rest thing that it needs to heal in that regard. And while, yes, Puglisi does have time to do that, you wonder if this is going to be a recurring injury and something that ultimately might need to be operated on. So, again, that's conjecture, and we'll see what Ryan ultimately looks like. But the fact that it's this kind of an injury, and just quite frankly, the visual of your freshman quarterback, a guy that you were sort of counting on to come in and play an important death piece when you don't have a whole lot else back there with walk-ons like Colin Drake and Sam Bush. The visual of him walking around with a cane, despite this being his first G-Day and game in Sanford Stadium, not a great look. So I think with this quarterback position going forward, there are more questions than answers right now in terms of depth and what's behind Carson. Now, the addition of Ryan Montgomery does help that in the long term. But for this 2024 season, Ryan Montgomery's availability, Ryan Puglisi's, we've got too many Ryans in this quarterback right now. Ryan Puglisi's availability, I think, is something to watch moving forward.
Just so we end on a positive note, we're going to go ahead and shift to our next loser, and that's going to be centered around running back depth. Georgia did lose Andrew Paul earlier this week to the transfer portal. And, of course, G-Day is not necessarily geared towards the running backs, but I feel like I saw enough out of Roderick Robinson and Trevor Etienne to have hope going into the season and maybe them restoring UGA to what it once was when it was RBU.
Yeah, Andrew Paul, by my estimations, had a great performance on G-Day. And then shortly after that, he uses that, I think, to enter the transfer portal. Now, I think the writing may have been on the wall for Andrew in terms of his pecking order with the Georgia running back room. And yet, Kaylee, I agree with you. You're right in bringing up Roderick Robinson and Trevor Etienne and how they looked. But as we saw last year, look, Georgia felt really good with what they had in Kenan Milton and Dejan Edwards. And then both those guys got hurt, and you're sort of wondering, okay, what does the running back position look like? All right, well, we're going to give Cass Jones some carries. We're going to move Dylan Bell from wide receiver to running back there. With Andrew Paul now out and transferring out of the program, you've got a lot of unknowns at that running back position. Brandon Robinson coming off a patella tendon injury. And then you have three freshmen coming in, and Chauncey Bowens, Nate Frazier, and Dwight Phillips Jr. So behind Trevor and Roderick, who I thought did well on Saturday, you do have some questions there about how deep that running back room is. They do have more bodies this year, and in that sense, it's encouraging. But I think you look back to early parts of last season, South Carolina game in particular, they really needed Dylan Bell to come in and make an impact that day. Fortunately, he was able to, but I don't think Georgia wants to get in a situation like that again. So it's going to be really imperative for Nate Frazier in particular to come in and hit the ground running, because we're still waiting into seeing what Branson Robinson's knee injury is going to look like. And with that in mind, Georgia's going to have to rely early on guys like Trevor Etienne and Roderick Robinson, knowing they're also going to need them to be healthy and be able to ride them over the course of the season as the games do get tougher.
I think you make a good point. After those first four games last year, we're just scrambling and hoping for the best at the running back position. That was something I don't think that Dog Nation had felt before. However, Nate Frazier and Dwight Phillips Jr. will come in, but they're going to finish out their high school career, so we're not even going to get the chance to see them until the fall. And that's honestly just kind of a concern to me, because that's less time for them to learn under a system that now is one quarterback short, especially with the injury around Branson Robinson. We saw what Chauncey Bowens could do. However, there's been more talk about Nate Frazier than anybody in this 2024 class, and I think that them not being here in time could potentially hurt later down the road.
Yeah, it's going to be something where there are going to be a lot of eyes and attention on what Nate Frazier is able to do quickly. Now, running back, as we have seen over the years, is a position where if you know it and you're just good enough to do so, and the belief is that Frazier is, you can come in and play a role right away. I think even Branson Robinson did a little bit of that prior to his injury in the 2022 season, but there's going to be some attention paid on him and those freshman running backs, especially with Andrew Paul now looking to go elsewhere. I would look for Paul to maybe end up back in his home state at a place like BYU, Houston, maybe TCU there as well. But this was a guy that actually really impressed me on Saturday, maybe for the first time in his Georgia career. And this just sort of shows what the portal is these days. He's, I think, using that as an opportunity, which is in his right, to sort of better his own career.
So earlier this year when we were doing our show, we did our spring position preview where I asked you to grade. I do want to ask you to grade the running back room as of right now versus what grade do they need to have for Georgia to be a true national championship contender?
Yeah, I think right now it's maybe a B minus, and maybe some of that is centered around the availability of Trevor Etienne for specifically that Clemson game. But I think over the course of the season, if you can get it to a B, if you're able to get healthy and productive seasons out of Roderick Robinson and Trevor Etienne, I believe enough in the talent both in them and on that Georgia offensive line that they're going to be able to be productive in the running game there. It doesn't need to be great when I think you have Carson Beck and you have that offensive line around them. So it doesn't need to be drastically better. But for right now, coming out of spring with some of the questions we have there, I'm going to give this group a B minus in terms of what they are and where they potentially need to be.
So let's end on a strong note here. Our last winner from G-Day is Smile Munden. And I know you guys are probably confused because Smile Munden did not participate in G-Day. He's been out with a foot injury. Connor, why do you have Smile here?
Yeah, so one, doesn't have to play on G-Day. I think that's a nice little win for him. Two, able to get healthy this spring as he recovers from a foot injury. Originally picked it up right before G-Day last year, and he was just never healthy for the last season. And so for him to have the ability to rest and recover and then ultimately get better, I think is going to help him entering the 2024 season. And with Small out, it has given Georgia a longer look at some of their young linebackers. CJ Allen comes down with an interception in G-Day, continues to look impressive there. Raylan Wilson had a strong game. Jalen Walker made a number of impact plays. And then Troy Bowles being credited with an interception there. I think you like what you see in this linebacker room. I think it's deeper than it was a season ago. Kirby Smart mentioned after the game on Saturday that they were really too young, specifically CJ Allen and Raylan Wilson being thrown in there at the end of last season. So them getting these reps helps them develop. And I think come this fall, it's going to help Smile Mundon as he goes out and leads what should be one of the more talented linebacker rooms in the country.
I just can't keep thinking about the fact that UGA has two more years with CJ Allen. Like, that just is beyond me, the fact that we're going to get to watch him play for two more years, because I really do think that he is the future of the Georgia defense.
Yeah, this is a guy, look, he was wearing that number three jersey on Saturday, mm-hmm. looked a lot like Roquan Smith. Now, those are obviously massive, massive shoes to fill. And Roquan didn't really become the Roquan of lore until his third year in the program. But I think with CJ, you saw him make that interception, really getting the best of Carson Beck on that rep there. He looked slimmed down. He looked to be in better shape on Saturday. Maybe that's just the fact that he was wearing the number three jersey instead of the 33. But this is a guy that people in the program speak incredibly highly of. And going into this fall, no Jamon Dumas Johnson, there's going to be a lot of expectations on the plate of CJ Allen. And I think based on what we've seen last year and what we've seen already from him coming out of spring practice, there's a reason to believe that this guy is more than capable of delivering.
Yeah, I think when it's all said and done, the fact that your number one linebacker is out and you still have this much depth at the position and so much to be excited for, I just feel like that's rare. And I'm really glad we got the opportunity to see some of the younger guys play at that position on G-Day.
Right. Chris Cole, Justin Williams, newcomers, freshmen at that inside linebacker position. Chris Cole nearly comes down with a tip ball interception himself. There's reason to be really excited about this linebacker room, not just for 2024, but going into the future as well, coming out of G-Day.
Well, just like there were winners and losers from G-Day, there has to be a winner and a loser from last week's Dog Nation G-Day draft. I would like to welcome in our fabulous referee, Cody Chaffins, who has the results.
I will remind everybody of your rosters, right? So Kaylee drafted Carson Beck, Arian Smith, Oscar Delp, Mykel Williams, Colby Young. The last two, Colby Young gets a touchdown. Mykel tips and intercepts himself. So 11 points for Mykel Williams. But then you had Oscar Delp. Then you had Arian Smith. And as you mentioned, Carson Beck threw the ball a lot. He put up a lot of points. But on the other side, you had Connor's team of Dom Lovett, who we talked about, that was a winner of G-Day. Jalen Walker, Rod Robinson, touched the ball for like the first 10 touches, it felt like, of the game. They just kept feeding him. Anthony Evans, 3 for 75, pretty good day for him. And then Gunnar Stockton, who said even if you take away his interception, which you probably should have, he had an excellent day. So the winner for this one, well, that would be Mr. Connor Riley.
We love to see it. We're back on the leaderboard. Look at that. That looks fantastic, taking the lead there over Kaylee. You know, credit to my team. I think I did a great job drafting. It's draft season. You just got to have an eye for talent, understand what's going on out there, and I feel very proud of the team and the way my guys performed on
Saturday. Okay, as you take your victory lap, we will remind everybody, too, that he did pick Wyndham Clark to win the Masters last week.
Yes.
I'm not sure he made the weekend, Connor. Missed the cut.
I will also say I
spoke out about Cash Jones last week,
and
he showed up in a sling. So get better, Cash. We want to see him on the field. All right, so Connor, take the win.
There is something I would like to say. Looking back on our draft, I don't necessarily regret anything I did, but I do think that the pick that hurt me the most was Oscar Delp. I mean, at that point, he might as well have been Benjamin Urosek because he just simply was not there. And that is my biggest regret of it all. I like Oscar Delp as a person, but I think that pick was a little bit too personal. But you know what? Mykel panned out. Colby Young panned out. Carson, not necessarily. But I congratulate you on your win. It was much deserved. And I will say that I knew this was coming, so I was able to mentally prepare for it, as opposed to 2 weeks ago when I didn't know that I was going to lose. So I've had time to process it. And, you know, the thing is you can only get better from here.
I just like to point out one, accountability. I don't blame players. You blame the person that drafted them. Two, you know, since we've moved to a format where Kaylee doesn't know my picks, I'm 2-0 in terms of selecting and in terms of winning the CKS or little head-to-heads here. So, you know, maybe Kaylee without the advantage is just, it's too much to overcome for her.
We've got a lot of shows, and I hope one day I'm going to make you eat your words. If you guys in the production room could go ahead and have that recording ready to go for as the season goes on, we're going to constantly bring that back up because I'm going to make you regret that statement. All right, Just a winners and losers from G-Day. If you didn't get enough of it, Connor did put out a Good Day UGA article with more winners and losers from G-Day, so you can check that out on our DogNation.com website, which is always free. Now, we're going to transition to something I have a feeling we're going to be talking a lot about as the season goes on. In fact, we're never going to stop talking about it, I imagine, and that's the transfer portal. So here's the thing. When the transfer portal basically became like this free agency, I think a lot of people were excited because it called for a lot of moves and a lot of attention. But honestly, Connor, it's just quite frankly exhausting at this point and really hard to keep up with.
And I think this has a negative impact, not just on teams. And obviously, Kirby, you hear him talk time and time again about having to go out and re-recruit your roster. I think this has a negative impact on fans. I've talked to fans. I've talked to people. It just becomes hard to know who's going to be on your team year to year. It becomes hard to know who to root for. And look, I understand the excitement. We were all sort of locked in together waiting to see what Caleb Downs was going to do in early January. If they had landed him, it would have been great excitement. Ultimately, they didn't. And you have to sort of move on from that. But at a certain point, you start to wonder if maybe this turns into the NBA a little bit and people are more watching the transactions than what is actually taking place on the field. And that's not good for the long-term health of the NBA. And I think it's similar with college football. Players have absolutely all the right in the world to move around with freedom of movement. They have actually made new transfer rules this week that further underlie the ability to transfer anywhere. And I'll note, I think you've seen part of the reason there was a lot of people that were saying, hey, this April transfer window going to be a chaos, bonanza, people moving left and right. I think because of the fact that players can't transfer within the SEC, I think that's a good thing for college football. And you haven't seen the same sort of portal movement. And I think it shows that moving forward, maybe a little bit more regulation when it comes to the transfer portal, I think just sort of helps the stability of the sport. And it, at the end of the day, makes it easier for fans to know who they're going to follow. Now, obviously, coaches move around all the time. And again, I think it's great for players that they have this freedom of movement. But at a certain point, it no longer becomes good for the sport if guys are moving and guys are holding their programs hostage, saying, okay, well, if this program's offering me a bigger bag, I'm just going to go chase that instead. Mm-hmm. I think in the long run, because you saw the development of, say, Jordan Davis, who didn't play right away, we've heard Kirby Smart speak glowingly about Quay Walker and the fact that, yeah, he could have transferred after his sophomore season. He sticks it out, becomes a national champion at Georgia in a first-round draft pick, and Georgia fans will remember him forever. By guys transferring out and moving on earlier in their careers, we're just losing recipes here. And I think at the end of the day, that's bad for college football. And it's bad for the fans. And so, again, while it's great for players that they have this freedom of movement, I think this transfer portal has shown, specifically the spring window so far, that some guidelines or restrictions, I think, help. And the more we sort of get those around that to where it's not this free-for-all, I think is going to be very good for the sport long-term. But I don't know how close we are to that day, Kaylee.
And speaking of dates, I think that's another thing that is a problem with the transfer portal is when the windows open up, because the first one opened up right after conference championships, this most recent one opening on Tuesday. So it's like we didn't even have time to really recap SEC championship or G-Day, because when the transfer portal opens up, that's where all the attention shifts. I just feel like the timing of it is so bad, and that's something that they're going to have to get right, because not only is it exhausting for fans, but also coaching staffs as well.
Well, and the big thing moving forward with this new 12-team expanded playoff, you're going to have the portal up and going while there are teams in those first round playoff games. And yes, the portal has existed before and you've seen some players move, but those games were at the end of January or at the end of December, beginning of January. And so I think with this portal window and the changes, you've already seen them make changes to the recruiting calendar with signing day, the early signing period now being the week before the SEC championship game, which I'm very interested in seeing how that's going to work out. A long week gets even longer for those of us in that business. But you're absolutely right, Kaylee. I think you look around at the various places you can get Georgia news from. On Monday and Tuesday, there were more articles about transfer portal, what to expect, who's going in, what Kirby Smart has said, rather than discussing players coming out of G-Day and how those players performed and what that means going forward. And I just think so much of that is because that's just sort of what our attention has been dictated to now. And so because there's this existence of this thing, we sort of have to feed that beast. And at the end of the day, it takes away from fans learning about players. takes away from discussing games, from looking back, say the SEC championship game, though I'm not sure you necessarily would want to do that if you're a Georgia fan. But again, I think that's just something that this is the modern day of college football. It's the bed that has been made, and unfortunately you have to lie in it. So until we get, I think, a better understanding of this, and I'm not naive enough to think that NIL is a big reason why this is the way that it is at this point in time, until we can get our arms around this, I think it's going to continue to frustrate fans and just make college football, while still a very enjoyable product, something that is just less fun on a day-by-day basis.
There was something that you brought to my attention yesterday, and I hadn't even thought about the transfer portal from this perspective, but it's the fact that it does have an impact on recruiting in a sense, because you used to get attached to players, but now you can't really necessarily, because we're seeing more 1 years leave after their first year than ever before, because it's like, okay, if I don't see myself getting quality playing time in my second year, that's fine. I can take my talent somewhere else. So I feel like when it comes to the recruiting side, as you mentioned, it's hard to be able to invest in the players, because there's a good chance that they can just get up and leave at any second.
Yeah, credit to producer Cody there. He brought up the point. It's harder to focus on recruits just knowing, okay, like, yeah, this is a big win, but a year from now he might be going somewhere else. So is this really a guy that's going to stick around the program for 3 to 5 years? Some are. I think Georgia tries to prioritize guys that are not necessarily influenced by the transfer portal, or at the very least, we'll put in those first 3-4 years. Kirby Smart has said time and time again, and I actually do believe him on this, the transfer portal can be a good thing if used in a right way. Now, right is different from Kirby Smart's definition, from, say, Tyler Williams' definition. Mm-hmm. But I think guys that work through the program, and once it's clear, you know, year three after year three, that maybe they may not be a real down-by-down starter, they can go ahead and look elsewhere. Because even at Georgia, a place where you may not be playing early on in your career, they're still doing things to develop you and turn you into good players. I think you look at some of the guys that have been through this program and transferred elsewhere. Amir Speed is a guy that was drafted last year out of Michigan State, in large part because of the special teams work that he did at the University of Georgia when he was a player here. So I think, again, you know, the transfer portal, yes, it is great for players, and it is very similar to coaches being able to up and move at any point in time. But with the NIL and their ability to do this every single year, it wears on you at a certain point, and there's only one head coach, and a head coach, you're not losing head coaches every single year, unless you're maybe App State and you go through a run there or something like that. When you're losing star players or important players or guys that you followed and were looking forward to seeing them grow over the course of their career, it does at a certain point sort of add up and like, well, what am I watching? Am I enjoying this sport 365 days a year? Or am I just showing up on the 12, 13, 14 Saturdays a year, or my team is playing a game and that's when I know who I have? And if it's more of the latter, that's not good long-term for the health of this sport.
Clearly, this is something that you're passionate about. So let me ask you this. You have just been elected as the commissioner of college football, a job which, if they had, I fully think you could be capable of handling. What would be the first thing that you would change about the transfer portal?
I think the first thing is, let's do one window. Let's do one window after the season. And I get academics have to be a factor into this. Let's do one window the first 2 weeks of January, because so many of these guys, they know where they're going, as Kirby Smart points out. And so I think let's shorten the window. Let's make it one window. The spring thing, again, you don't need to be holding your roster. You don't need to be held hostage by your roster in sort of terms of figuring out who is going to go where. You know, yes, free agency is a thing year-round in the NFL, but so much of it is dictated in that early March window when things sort of open up at the beginning of the new league year. So I think if we could limit it to just that January, those first 2 weeks in January after the college football playoff ends, or going forward, now this is part of the problem, college football playoff isn't going to end until the middle of January. So that does in some ways make it more difficult. But again, you know, I know there was a lot of hand-wringing about, oh, if Caleb Downs transfers, is he going to be able to get into his new school right away and go through spring practice? It was always going to be the case. He was always going to be able to do that. So I think getting the window in January to just those 10 days where for most teams the season is over, I think that's maybe a very strong first step, because obviously the NIL aspect is a huge part of it as well. But we're not introducing signing contracts, making them employees of the university. I think limiting the transfer window to one singular window, I think, is going to go a long way in sort of helping turn down some of the noise that comes with this.
Well, as much as I would love to say that that's going to be the end of our transfer portal discussion, I think you and I both know that that's not the case. And I imagine that it's something that we are going to be discussing on many Dog Nation at-larges to come. But for now, we will end it there. And Dog Nation, I want to remind you, even if you can't watch us on video, you can take us with you on the go through our Dog Nation podcast network on SoundCloud, Apple, or Spotify, whether it's Dog Nation at Large or you want to listen to On the Beat or Before the Hedges. You can do that on any of those platforms. Take us on the road with you. Now we're going to transition into something I'm really, really excited for. This is our new segment, Tired or Wired. I mean, wow. Would you look at that intro? Art, we got to give credit to Cody Chaffins. Not only is he a fantastic referee, but all these new features that you're seeing are put together by him. And so we cannot give him enough credit for basically captivating what this show is ultimately all about, never knowing what's going to happen next. So this is Tired or Wired, and this is going to be the Masters edition. Before we get to our topics, Connor. Just overall, how was your Masters experience? How would you rate it?
Wired, inspired, anything but tired. Just an incredible day. I was fortunate enough to be able to go with one of my best friends in the world. A true bucket list kind of day. You know, Kaylee, I know this is before your time. The 1993 movie Jurassic Park, when they see the dinosaurs for the first time. That's what it's like. It was my first time going to Augusta. I was like on every hole. You're just like dumbfounded by seeing the colors, the whole, everything sort of up there. It's a true all-time experience. And I hope that any true sports fan, you know, you don't even have to be a diehard golf fan to really enjoy, I think, the majesty of Augusta National. There's a scene in The Other Guys where they go to a Broadway show. I totally just undersold what Augusta was. The pageantry, the costumes, wow, what a golf course. Just a simply incredible time that I hope everyone gets a chance to experience.
This was before your time. Anytime I do this from now on, just know I'm trying to be offensive. That's what I have to say to that.
I feel like, see, I can't do that hard thing anymore. A certain Indianapolis Star columnist has just sort of ruined that for everyone mm-hmm. other than Caitlin Clark. We don't need to get into that here. But, yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, so from now on, Dog Nation, if you see me giving my heart, that is me trying to purposely say you. All right, so
yeah, have you seen Jurassic Park?
I have seen Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Many times. All right, enough of that. Let's get into Tired or Wired. We've got a few categories here. Connor does not know the things we're going to talk about. So first one, starting strong, Masters sandwiches. Tired or Wired?
Wired. I could have eaten 8 pimento cheese sandwiches. Those things are delicious. I know some people prefer the egg salad. I saw John Rahm just housing an egg salad sandwich after he just mastered drive on the 7th green. Thing was $1.50. Don't get the chicken sandwich and pair it with anything. It's not very good. I've been told the barbecue sandwich, which is a warmer sandwich, is, if you're into that, something good. But honestly, the pimento cheese sandwich is all you need, with the exception of the peach ice cream sandwich, which is the single best menu item at Augusta.
I do have a question because I'm curious. The white bread, like, is it yes, no? I don't know. Yeah. I just can't imagine. Yeah. Yeah.
I see. Now, I'm a bit of a bread snob. So, like, you know, you see it there and you're like, white bread, like, are we really doing this? It goes perfect with the pimento cheese. It's so easy to down. It is everything that you need. Cause, you know, a lot of times you're just rolling through the concession stand, trying to get some food on your way to your next hole, wherever you're going. It's the perfect grab and go snack. And the bread makes it super easy and super enjoyable.
Okay. That's the only thing I couldn't really picture. I do have to admit, I did have a 30-minute long nap dream about Masters pimento cheese sandwiches, and I've never had one before. So I'm excited to have one myself one day. All right. Next one, following Tiger Woods around on the course, tired or wired?
Tired. These people are the absolute worst. Now, like, again, you know, Tiger Woods, the GOAT of my generation. So I wanted to see him, and, you know, knowing, you know, how many more times are we going to get to see Tiger Woods play golf? One of the great athletes of my life, wanted to be able to say, yeah, like, yeah, I saw Tiger Woods play at Augusta. He did par the 9th hole on Thursday when I was able to watch him. But we got there, you know, maybe a group or two before he and his group came through on Thursday. And my buddy and I, they were able to move freely, not a whole lot of people around us. by the time Tiger came down and was hitting his approach shot, like, we were moshed and you couldn't move. And like, these people are rooting for Tiger like he is their own child. And it's just, I'm glad I've done it once. I've seen it. I have no desire to engage with those Tiger freaks ever again.
When you say GOAT of your generation, do you mean greatest golfer or greatest athlete? There is a difference.
He is in the discussion for greatest athlete of sort of my lifetime, my generation.
Okay.
I think it's him. I think it's Tom Brady, LeBron James. It's probably those three.
Yeah, Serena Williams has entered the chat.
Serena Biles has entered the chat.
All right. I'll let you have that. I just wanted to clarify that because there's obviously been some controversy with the Herschel Walker, Brock Bowers argument. So I just wanted to give you the opportunity to explain yourself. All right. No phones at the Masters. Tired or wired?
Wired. I think more sporting events should be like this. You should have to leave your phone in the car and just enjoy the presence of it. It did feel weird at first. Like, I'm like, okay, am I forgetting something? Where is it? Was so great to not have it out there. And sure, you would have liked to have taken pictures, and I'm sure I would have had that. But honestly, like, the no phones thing is great. The only thing that is a little tricky is if you're there with someone else and you're either going to the bathroom, going to the concession line, or the gift shop, which is a borderline war zone, you have to be able to locate your person in a crowd, because if you lose them quickly, you might be stuck for a while. So with that one caveat, I would still say no phones. Great, great idea by the Masters.
Did you make any phone calls on the ones that they provide?
I did not, but I did think about it.
You should have called me. I would have really appreciated that, but I understand. All right. You brought up merch. Let's talk about Masters merch. And this can mean a lot of things, how expensive it is or how hard it is to get. Masters merch in general, especially like buying a bunch on day one, tired or wired?
Tired. My buddy and I, and like, you know, like, I got myself a pullover. My buddy got himself a hat. Like, but when you go to the Masters and you let other people know, they're asking you to buy stuff for them. And so, like, yeah, they'll pay you back. But the merch bill that my buddy and I ran up for, I got myself a nice little lightweight hoodie pullover. I think he got himself a similar one and a hat. We spent nearly $800 on merch there. And I'm just not comfortable spending that amount of money at one point in time. And you know, we got the bill sorted out and everything taken care of, but yeah, the Masters merch, it's insane.
Please tell me that everyone Venmo'd you ahead of time. Like, did you make that happen, or did you have to wait till after?
I waited until after, and like, a lot of these I got for my family, and they're not gonna pay me for this. So yeah.
No.
Yeah. I spent $400 on Masters merch alone, and I got essentially one thing for myself. Two things if you count a pin that I got.
You are a better person than I am. All right. Chairs with no armrest. Tired or what?
I like this. I'll know, like, if you're someone who's never been, I think, you know, you walk the course, you see everyone, you follow everyone, and you go do it. And I totally get that. If you go a second time, the way to do it is you just camp out on the 16th green. That way you can see the approach shot on 15. You can see them hit onto Vern's little corner there. It's the best way to do it. I like the no armrest thing. It's a great way to go about it. I'm definitely going wired there.
All right. This one, I'm excited to see where you go with this. Tired or wired? The city of Augusta, Georgia.
Tired. Traffic is always really bad there in terms of getting around it, whether it be you're going to Columbia or you're going somewhere else. I got a buddy that lives there, likes it, doesn't love it there. I've had a lot of friends that have worked there for the news station there. I'm going to go the city of Augusta tired, but overall Augusta National, absolutely wired. You know, it was from Athens, because it's not a straight drive. You're going a lot of back roads. I think 78 down to 20 is not exactly the easiest drive. But we were able to do it and make it a day trip. We left at 8:30 in the morning. We got home at just after, I think, 10 o'clock at night, or just before 10 o'clock at night. So a full day in Augusta.
I think that's one of the most fascinating things about the Masters to me, is like, this prestigious traditional golf tournament is just smack dab in the middle of Augusta, Georgia. And that's pretty much all that's there, except for Mason Short. Mason Short, you are in Augusta, Georgia, and we recognize that. But it's just, it's also like in the middle of town. Like, you would think like the golf course would kind of be out in the way, but I know it's smack dab there in the middle. And like, it's just really strange for me, because I can't imagine people that fly in from out of town and aren't from Georgia and don't know what Augusta is like coming to the city, and you're like, oh, This is where the Masters is.
You see so many private jets, you know, on the drive-in flying in and out. And you're like, are people really just taking a private jet just to fly in for the day and then fly out? Evidently, that is what you're doing. I do have a question for you, though. So Dad also went to the Masters this year, posted about it, said it was going to be a battle royale at the concession stands. I would like to clear up the notion. You're not fist fighting anyone. The concession lines are moved super smoothly. It's one of the many great joys of Augusta. Did your dad not get you anything at Augusta this year?
He did. I have not been able to retrieve it from him. He allegedly did get me something, but the something that I always joke about from past Masters is he did get me a Masters book bag a few years ago, which you may see me walking around with from time to time. And I'm one of four Mansell daughters, and I've always said that I've been able to tell that I am my dad's favorite child because the last time that he went to the Masters, everybody got a hat and I got a book bag, and that's like how I know that I have the golden child status. So I told him, don't get me a book bag this year. It's already pretty clear who the front runner is, and plus I would like to add another hat to my collection.
Yes, you got a hat. So I would say, you know, if he really loved you, he would have spent big on the quarter zip, because those things, as I got one for my dad, are quite expensive.
He went on Sunday, so he did say that there was a lot of things that were out, but also then again, there are no phones and I wasn't there, so who am I to really know the truth? So we're going to wrap up Tired and Wired here with the grounds. Did you enjoy walking them? Are they really that hilly? Like, is it hard to tell on TV how difficult it is?
Wired. Now, I will note, I like to run a lot. I am currently preparing to go hike the Grand Canyon. So I realize that my sort of health regimen is different from other people, but you do realize how quickly and hilly this sort of course is. Even walking on one, you come in through the clubhouse and the first fairway is almost like straight uphill. It is certainly something that I think if you're not prepared for it from a health standpoint, I would suggest next year, like if you're going to go to the Masters, if you have the privilege and the ability to do so, maybe like the month before, start doing some walking, you know, some long distance thing. I think I walked over like 6 miles that day. And when my buddy and I, who were both in really good shape, got in the car and sat down for the first time today, we both made like those audible, like old man, oh, noises. So it is definitely a chore to walk up and down it. And it makes you, I think, have a further appreciation for just how difficult it is to win there, given the elevation changes.
Yeah, man, thanks for that advice, because I got whooped walking up the steps at Sanford Stadium on G-Day, so I can't complain knowing what you had to endure at Augusta National. And with that, that is our very first edition of Tired or Wired here on Dog Nation at Large. And we do have to announce one more thing before we wrap up. Tomorrow is a very, very, very special day for people like Connor and myself as Swifties. That's part of who we are. We're not ashamed to admit it. Her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, comes out tomorrow. And I have to say that my favorite tortured poet is actually behind Connor there. You have Mr. Michael Scott there with one of the greatest quotes of all time. My favorite tortured poet, personally. But I know that we're both really ecstatic. Some of you might not feel that way, but that's just who we are, and we're not ashamed to say it.
Yeah, Kaylee, I was going to ask, no white for the album release? Like, what's going on there? I thought
we told me you weren't going to wear white. I didn't even put it together that you were wearing it. I did ask Connor if he would like to wear white, and he, word for word, he wouldn't because of the principal or some, you know, fancy thing that Connor says. I don't know, but I'm wearing white pants. Does that count? And white shoes.
You know, look, 1989 was a more blue album. I guess you're looking backward. I'm looking forward. 1201 Friday night, going to be wide awake, texting all the Swifties out there. Very much looking forward to this.
All right. Well, I'm already looking forward to next week's episode of Dog Nation at Large. We're going to do some draft coverage and also do our very first ever Dog Nation employee draft. I'm really excited for that, and I hope you guys will be too. But Dog Nation, as always, thank you for joining us here at our brand new show, Dog Nation at Large. Next week, it's just going to be new. Maybe not brand new. Thank you for joining us today, and we will see you right back here at dognation.com next Thursday at 7.